Coming up next, another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237. Back again, former governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo. And we're going to continue our discussion that we had last week. And we ended with NYCHA, and we ended with Cambridge, Massachusetts. The housing authority there that did great work in renovating the housing authority, who's done outstanding work. They took RAD and they kept the employees there and kept the union there, and they did phenomenal work. I mean, it was so good. They put the heating and the electrical and the air conditioning on the roof. So if there's ever a storm, those things don't get flooded and they don't get ruined. And they moved their power to the top floors, and all the heat is controlled by someone's phone. You don't even have to come in. Central heat, central air conditioning. It is a wonderful place. I would invite anybody to go if they can get a tour of how they did it. They did it right.
Yeah. You know, Cambridge, Massachusetts, good for them. As you know, I was Housing and Urban Development Secretary. So I visited hundreds of housing authorities all across this nation. I was literally in every state in the country. There is no doubt that NYCHA can be turned around. It's just bricks and mortar, right? We're not talking rocket science here. We know how to do this. You live in this city, you've seen massive buildings going up all the time, massive commercial buildings. Why can't we just build residential buildings on the NYCHA complexes? You're starting with buildings that are 60, 70, 80 years old. What are you doing trying to patch them up? The Chicago Housing Authority was the worst housing authority in the United States of America. You know, Cambridge, Massachusetts is relatively small. So people may say, well, you can do that in Cambridge. All right. Chicago was much worse than NYCHA. Chicago was Cabrini-Green. It was really terrible projects, high crime. The mothers used to have the children sleep in bathtubs because the bullets used to come right through the wall. I mean, it was really terrible. And what we did was we took down the buildings. Well, let me say it the other way. We built new buildings. And the residents were in the old building, seeing the new building built. And once the new building was built, we moved them in. We took down the old building. And we did it on a mixed income way. So we went to private developers and we said, you want to build private housing? We'll make a deal. We'll give you X number of market rate units, but you have to build for us X number of new public housing units. And we had mixed income communities. But that's what has to be done here. And it can be exciting and it can be fun. You know, the way NYCHA was designed, and you know this better than I, there's a lot of green space on a lot of these public housing projects, right?
Right.
Because they were built to have open space and park space within the complex. So you have land, and land is the most valuable commodity. Use that land, build new buildings, mixed income, and then take down the old. Because the old, you're throwing good money after bad. Nobody would do this in the real world. Only government would be changing plumbing in a 70-year-old building. Trust me.
Wow. A few years ago, you pushed to add 500 new cops in the subway system to protect against rising crime and assaults on MTA workers. It was considered controversial then, but a lot of people fought you on that. In light of what's happening now since then, and just last week, God was literally set on fire in the subway system. What do you make of that controversy now?
You know, the murder of Mr. Floyd, which everyone saw on TV, was just such a horrendous display of police brutality. And it was a wake-up call, if we needed one. We knew it here in New York, but it was a wake-up call to the nation that we have to make sure our police are better trained, they're respectful, they understand differences, and that we have zero tolerance for police abuse. But, you know, in our society, Greg, the pendulum often swings from one side all the way to the other. And then some became anti-police, and we're against police. Defund the police was what some members of the Democratic Party said. Defund the police. The three dumbest words ever spoken in a political context, defund the police. Defund the police. 75% of the victims of crime are Black and brown. You know, defund the police. If you live in a Manhattan high rise and you have a security guard and a driver and you have a doorman and you have someone at the front desk, you know, you have protection. But if you are working class, you need the police. Trained, respectful police, but you need the police. You want people to get into public transportation. Number one, it has to be safe. It has to be safe. And that requires police. Well, we'll send in National Guard. It's a National Guard can't arrest anyone. All the National Guard can really do at the end of the day is call a police officer. But then you need a police officer to call. So yes, make people feel safe. It's job one for government. And that will start bringing people back into the public transportation system if they feel safe. You know, I'm old enough to remember the bad old days in New York, where when you went into the subway, first of all, you took off any jewelry, watch, anything, you put it in your pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you went and you stood next to the token booth because there was a person in the booth. Right. Yeah. So you stood next to the token booth and then you looked around the platform to see where the police officer was. And if there was a police officer, you went and stood right next to the police officer. You got on the train and you walked through the train looking for the police officer. And when they had a police officer in that car, then everybody sat in that car with the police officer. Right. So, we went through that. We know what it's like to have that fear in you. And the police, I think, can provide that sense of safety and security again, which is what's going to get people to go into public safety. You're not going to force them to take the train. You're not going to raise the tolls high enough where they say, okay, I will endanger my life because I don't want to pay a higher toll. Public transportation has to be safe, period.
I agree. I remember those times. And let's hope we can get there. The migrant situation has been in the news a little less lately, but it's still here. Governor Abbott is still sending migrants to New York City. You said a lot about what the feds and the state should do or didn't do. In your opinion, where do we go from here?
Look, they put Mayor Adams in an impossible situation. Mayor Adams said, I'll accept migrants, has now accepted 175,000 migrants. And the federal government that is responsible for the entire problem because they manage the border, the federal government has said, I have nothing to do with anything. The state says, really only New York City should take the migrants. Why? Why not Long Island? Why not Westchester? Why not upstate? Well, the politicians didn't want the migrants in the other areas. So the state says only New York City, which, by the way, was wholly unfair. And then they say, And New York City, Mayor Adams, you have to pay for it also, which was outrageous. The mayor said to the state, at least split the cost with me. I'm taking all the migrants. At least split the cost. I'm paying for hotels, I'm paying for food, I'm paying for safety, I'm paying for education. At least split the cost 50-50. The state said no. The state said, we'll give you 25%. And by the way, it's not really even 25%. So it has been outrageously unfair. And I think it's gotten to the point where Mayor Adams should say, I can't do it anymore. I can't do it anymore. I can't ask the people of New York City to continue to pay for migrants when I have a federal government and a state government that are really doing virtually nothing to help. My father used to say, who is a great fan of yours, by the way, my father used to say, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. In government, Washington, Albany, they will get away with whatever they can get away with. If the mayor doesn't call them out, they will take advantage of you all day long. The mayor has to say, no more. You're abusing the New York City taxpayer. You're abusing them. If New York City taxpayers knew that their state senator or their assembly person stuck them with the bill for migrants, none of them would get reelected. But you have to make it public. And the mayor has to call out the state. He has said it, but you have to say it again and again and again until those senators and assembly people say, you know what? I'm getting trouble in my district. We have to reimburse for the migrants because I'm getting trouble in my district. If they don't feel it, Greg, in their own backyard, they don't care.
Right. Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. You passed congestion pricing and it's slated to go into effect any day now. You recently said that this was the right policy at the wrong time. What do you mean by that?
We passed congestion pricing about 5 years ago. We started talking about it maybe 10 years ago. Mayor Bloomberg was the first one to start talking about congestion pricing. Congestion pricing says the traffic in the central city is impossible. This was done in London, cities in Europe. But we have to get people out of cars into public transportation. So congestion pricing said, if you're going to drive in peak hours, you're going to pay a higher toll. So you have an incentive to get on the bus or in the subway. That was the concept of congestion pricing. And at one time it made sense. Now, post-COVID, we're in a totally different world. People don't want to come into the city in the first place, right? We were talking about remote work,
yes.
Zoom work. They don't want to come in the first place. I'm going to stay in Queens and I'm going to Zoom in. You now say to me, oh, and by the way, when you come in, I'm going to double the toll. It's now going to cost you close to $20 to drive into the city. I say, forget it. I'm staying home. The last thing we need now is another obstacle or deterrent for people coming into the city. Number two, you want me to get on the subway? Make the subway safe. I mean, I'm just reading in the newspaper, you're sending in the National Guard into the subways. You make it sound like it's a war zone. You're sending in the National Guard. It's an admission of how dangerous it must be. So you're telling me My alternative is to pay a very high toll or go into the subway system, which you led me to believe is a war zone. I choose option C, which is I'm staying home or I'm moving to another place.
That explanation makes a lot of sense. It's the right policy at the wrong time. And the MTA has shown no ability to manage money and do what they say they're going to do. Money just disappears. It's like putting water through a strainer. It just goes. And we see no improvements.
Yeah. And look, the MTA, which I have a lot of experience with, we were talking about the delays in the capital projects. How does it get 10 years late, 20 years late, double the budget, triple the budget? You know, when you say to people, I'm going to raise your toll to give the MTA more money to build new projects, a better system, people say, I don't believe that money is going anywhere. I believe it's just going to go into one of these slow, stalled, over budget projects that doesn't happen in my lifetime. Second Avenue Subway. 40 years, Greg. 40 years. Moynihan Station. 30 years. You know? Well, give them more money. No, thank you.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be done. And we're going to look back. I don't have 30 years. I don't. I really don't.
You have 30 years.
I don't have. I'm 61. 30 years, I'd be 91. It won't make a difference to me.
Well, you're, at least you're going to be here, Greg.
Listen, I may be here, but it won't make a difference to me. So I don't have 30 years. Middle East policy and history certainly is complicated, but it feels like there's a huge change in how younger Americans view Israel today. What do you make of the protests on Gaza?
Well, look, if you're a New Yorker, you grow up with the Jewish community, right?
Yes.
They are part of what makes New York, New York. Two of my brothers-in-law are Jewish. My colleagues, my best friends, etc. So you are very much simpatico with Israel. If you know the history, you are very much simpatico with Israel and what they have gone through. I think for the younger people, what they're seeing is what they're watching on the news. You know, younger people, if it didn't happen last week, then it's not really relevant, you know?
Right.
History, yeah. What's the relevance of history, right? Yeah. It's only what's happening today that matters. And when they first, after October, the October debacle, I thought it was going to, the war would be maybe a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 8 months. Every night on the TV news, Israel bombing Gaza, Israel bombing Gaza, horrendous scenes of young people, children not getting enough to eat. And I think the young people hear that. And they say they are angry at Israel for their apparent over-aggression. And I think that's what you're seeing. Now, does that justify these young people who say we're pro-Hamas? That is outrageous. Hamas is a terrorist organization. They rape, they kill, they brutalize. Why would you ever put on a mask and say, I'm pro-Hamas? By the way, 9/11, right, was a terrorist attack. Did you see any demonstrations of people going out and saying, well, hold on a second, the terrorists had a point, you know, and I'm pro-terrorist.
Yeah.
You know, and then we tracked down Al-Qaeda for 10 years, you know. We had thousands of military deaths tracking down terrorists. So I think they're responding to what they see on the news. But I think being pro-Hamas is just inexplicable to me.
Yes. You pointed that out. And what you said is true. And I don't want to criticize some thought here, but you kind of knew that the Israeli government would go overboard and turn the tide against themselves. I mean, I was sitting there saying, this gives him an opportunity and he's just not going to stop. It's just like, okay, he hit me. I'm just going to pummel him. It comes a time that you have to be strategic and say, what are our goals? And certainly your goal is not to have everyone protesting against you and the people who started this, who created the atrocity, are now the heroes. I mean, that doesn't work.
Yeah. I think I understand exactly what you're saying. I think Israel takes a different position. I think Israel is saying, look, I'm going to win this war, and I'm going to win it once and for all. And well, public relations, public opinion, they've always been against us anyway. And I have to complete the war by routing out Hamas. And they're in 300 miles of tunnels, and they're under the hospitals, and they're under the schools. And I have to go in and get them out, because if I don't go in and get them out, the same thing is going to happen a few months from now. So I have to do it. I have to do it fully. Does it seem like it has taken an extraordinary long time? Yes. But I think in some ways, their number one objective is we're going to fully win this war so it doesn't happen again. And public relations are public relations.
Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of the children that they're killing, the families, everything else, 10, 15 years when they grow up, they're going to have the problem all over again, because they're creating people in animosity, and the cycle continues. It just continues. We have about 30 seconds. In 30 seconds, your last thoughts. And thank you for appearing on two shows. And it was certainly a pleasure. We could do four shows. We could do a week. We could make this a weekly thing. I mean, you know, it's better than Gail and Charles Barkley, I think. So
yeah, I think
I'm open to, we're opening to somebody picking this up, because I think this is a very good discussion. Thank you.
Well, it was a good discussion, because it was an honest discussion, and there's not enough straight talk in politics today. But let me say this in closing. Thank you for your leadership. Thank the Teamsters. Thank Local 237. Thank you for keeping this city and state running. And most of all, on a personal level, thank you for what you and your members did during COVID. I will never forget how your guys stepped up, and no one stayed home and no one hid under the bed. They stood up and they did their job. And if your members hadn't, the train could have come off the rails very easily. So thank you, and God bless you, and God bless your members.
We appreciate it. You've been listening to Reaching Out. Gregory Floyd, a very special guest, once again, was former governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo. Thank you once again. And you can come on our show anytime you want. Pick up the phone. We'll be here for you. We'll have a special broadcast, whatever you need. Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Greg. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to tune in again each and every Saturday at this same time for another edition of Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. The preceding pre-recorded program paid for by Teamsters Local 237.